And now it's time for Southern California's sports fishing voice. Let's Talk Hookup. For the next 2 hours, join Pete Gray, Rock Cod Rick Mexa, Corey Sandin, and this week's special expert guest for fishing information, new techniques to catch more fish, and the most current scoop on what's happening in the water. Let's Talk Hookup is sponsored in part by Royal Polaris, the world's finest long-range sports fisher. By Ford, the official truck of Let's Talk Hookup, and Shimano Rods and Reels. Fish with the best, Shimano. Get ready for the fastest 2 hours on radio with the hosts of Let's Talk Hookup, Pete Gray, Rock God Rick Mexa, and Corey Sandin.
Good morning, anglers, and welcome to Let's Talk Hookup. I'm Pete Gray with Rock, soon to be here, Rock God Rick Mexa. We're in the world headquarters of Let's Talk Hookup, right next to the San Diego Landings, foggy San Diego Landings in Point Loma. We have a couple of great guests here. Lyle and Elena Belquist, they're fisheries biologists and just all-around good people that love to fish and love to talk about fishing. So you stay tuned. This is Southern California's sports fishing voice. It's Let's Talk Hookup on the Let's Talk Hookup app, Sports Grid Radio Network, and YouTube and Facebook Live.
If you're into saltwater fishing, listen to this. Saturday, November 2nd, it's Tackle Day at Fisherman's Landing in San Diego. Hi, this is Doug Kern. We are pulling out all the stops on this one. Over 20 manufacturers' reps like Shimano and PowerPro. Check out all the Shimano and PowerPro product we have, like the all-new Talica A Series Reel. Backed by popular demand, the Shimano Tranks Casting Contest. Cast a Shimano Tranks 500 and a Shimano Terramar 90H rod and show your surface iron casting skill. You'll see Shimano Terramar is the perfect rod to handle tough fish. The secret is TC4 blank construction. Match your Shimano Terramar rod with a Shimano Tranks 500 reel. Shimano's X-Ship and HEG technologies in the Shimano Tranks combine to provide massive cranking power with a smooth and effortless retrieve. It's our biggest sale of the year, Tackle Day at Fisherman's Landing. Unbelievable pricing on tackle, clothing, and accessories. Saturday, November 2nd.
It's time for the PowerPro 30-second seminar. I like catching big fish, and I like smaller reels, too. How do I make sure that I have the capacity to land the big one? I fill my reels with PowerPro Max Quattro. It's 25% thinner than standard PowerPro, so you get more line on that small reel. PowerPro has a complete series of highly effective lines, including the brand new PowerPro Depth Hunter Offshore, with different colors every 100 feet, perfect for flatfall fishing. Want to learn more? Check PowerPro.com.
If there's one thing we like, it's choices. And at your San Diego County Ford dealers, you can find yours with the Ford F-150. Whether it's towing, powering up, or getting from 0 to 60 in 3.8 seconds, the power to choose between gas, hybrid, or all electric is yours. Tough this smart can only be called F-150. Only at your San Diego County Ford dealers, they'll be glad to hook you up.
Welcome back to Let's Talk Hookup. Man, what a fun show today is going to be. It's like having the old crew back in the house.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun.
As you can see, if you're watching us on YouTube and Facebook Live, a little foggy out there, but you see
the searcher
in the background. Royal Star just pulled out to the fuel dock. They were here earlier, but we're going to go back in the studio now and welcome Lyle and Elena. Good morning.
Hey, guys.
Thank you so much. Great to have you.
And you spent the summer up in Canada, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Sure did, eh?
Yeah. Up in Victoria, BC.
You betcha.
Yeah. Elena is a very proud Canadian.
Yeah. And American now.
And American. You're both. Are you a dual citizen?
She's dual.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it is really, really
cool. So, what has been going on in your lives? Tell us.
So, I'm lifelong fisherman, fisheries biologist my entire career. Hunter. All things water, all things outdoors. I've been working for the Nature Conservancy for the last 7.5 years as a fisheries biologist, but I recently left that position and took a big leap, and I'm still based at Scripps, where I always have been based, but I'm, you know, and still a fisheries biologist, but exploring new projects and new opportunities. Just took the leap into the unknown, and I'm excited.
Cool.
And so how is your job going to change now?
Now I get to work on the projects that I choose.
That's cool.
So, you know, now I've got a whole collaborative network of folks up and down the entire West Coast working on, you know, whatever projects that I think are important and that I want to get done.
So Give us an example.
Well, right now an example would be barred sand bass. That's a big issue going on right now. Calicos and sand bass have been managed very similarly for decades, and now there's a lot of discussion based on historical science and based on recent science, particularly recent science, about how the sand bass spawning aggregations have been gone for a long time, but in the last couple of years, they've started to see a little bit of a resurgence, and now the question is, what do we want to do with this new opportunity with the barred sand bass coming back? Because prior to that, they were gone for about a decade.
What happened to them?
Oh, wow. So, I mean...
the real easy question.
Yeah. So we can go back a really long ways. Sand bass and calicos have been fished for... We have data going back over 100 years, and prior to 1953, they were actually fished recreationally and commercially, but in 1953 they decided, based on what they knew about the species at that time, that commercial fishing for those species wouldn't be sustainable. So that ended in the early 50s. Since then, it's been purely a recreational fishery. And we've seen catches slowly ramp up over the decades, particularly for barred sand bass. The landings peaked in the early to mid 2000s, and we were catching a lot of fish at that point. So, you know, I'm not sure if we, over time, it took us decades in the 70s and 80s and 90s to sort of learn where the spawning aggregations were in the summertime, or if prior to that period they just weren't around very much, and due to oceanographic patterns that the fish moved in. That question is still open for debate, but essentially, what we see are two species, calicos and sand bass, that have very similar life history characteristics and very similar biology. The main difference when it comes to managing the fishery is that barred sand bass form highly predictable spawning aggregations, whereas calicos, we know roughly when and where they spawn, but they tend to spawn just all throughout the kelp beds up and down the whole coast, so they're not as aggregated and not as predictable as sand bass, and so that makes sand bass a lot more vulnerable. And so the question is, because the landings went down so dramatically from about 2006 to 2012, what should we be doing now? And in 2013, CDFW stepped up and said, okay, for calicos and sand bass, we need to make some regulatory changes, which the fleet is familiar with. Obviously, now they increased the minimum size limit from 12 to 14 inches and decreased the bag limit as well. And that really helped calicos. There was about a 3 or 4 year period when catches were down because of those new regulations, but that was expected. Anytime you implement an increased minimum size limit, you're going to see those catches go down. But since then, calicos have bounced back, and that fishery is just phenomenal right now.
Yeah. And I think that's widely accepted amongst everyone.
Totally. But barred sand bass didn't come back, so their catches continued to go down and stay down for about a decade. That's largely because barred sand bass have very unique requirements, oceanographically speaking, for their spawning to be successful. And so we, in the last few years, we've had those conditions come about, and we're now seeing those fish enter the fishery. So we have a new pulse of fish coming in that started last year and really ramped up this year. And so we have this brand new cohort of fish. Spawning aggregations are slowly starting to appear again. And so the question is, now that we have this opportunity, what do we want to do with it?
Yeah, and not overfish it.
Not repeat history.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So the big question is, will Department of Fish and Wildlife listen to you?
Well, so right now, so Ken Franke has been at the forefront of this at SAC, and he has been working directly with CDFW, and academics have been working with CDFW. When I was with TNC up until a few weeks ago, TNC was, on the table. I'm still involved.
Being the Nature Conservancy.
The Nature Conservancy, yeah. So it's been a broad collaborative effort in terms of getting the science that's needed to the table to inform questions about what we want to do next. And so that's an ongoing discussion, and it'll be brought to the Fish and Game Commission in November for...
And they should. They, yeah. I mean, they're pretty open to it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's good science.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it'll protect the future. Not that we want more regulations, of course.
Exactly.
But we want to protect the species.
Yeah. We want to use the best science we have available and all the data that we have available to make the barred sand bass fishery as healthy as it can be, just like we did with calicos.
Yeah, for sure. And Elena, what have you been up to?
Strong start there.
See who you married, right?
I mean, he did a better part of his PhD was on barred sand bass, so you have like a world expert.
The world expert on barred sand bass.
I still can just listen to him talk about it.
We have
so
2 hours to talk about it.
We met at Scripps Oceanography in 2012. I worked for SAC from 2012 to my last project was last May, so I finished up at the Tuna Camp, the Tuna Conference. And so that was an amazing experience working with SAC and the fleet and with Ken, and just beyond my wildest imagination.
Yeah.
It was just a really wonderful time. And why I reached out to you was because since 2020, I had a pretty severe health challenge and became very, very sick with Lyme disease.
Lyme disease.
Yeah. And so I have, pivoted a little bit. I've written a book and it's being published this year about recovery from Lyme disease and lessons that I've learned from my career as a biologist and bringing all those things together and how I recovered relatively quickly for such a devastating disease.
So first of all, how did you get Lyme's disease?
So, and the reason I'm here is because the fishing community in many ways is the hunting community.
The hunting community, yeah, sure.
And the hunting community, like I'm married to a hunter. I went on my first bison hunt last December. I want to be outside all the time. That's where I want to be. And those people just are at a disproportionately higher risk for encountering ticks and therefore Lyme disease. So that's why I reached out to you.
Right.
And your question was, what did you just
say? Like, how did you get it?
Yeah, so...
can you pinpoint it?
I can. I'm quite sure. So I've been riding horses since I was about 10 years old.
Uh-huh.
And I've been riding up in Rancho Santa Fe for a long, long time. And I was bitten by a tick right here in San Diego.
Wow.
And so...
So the thought that Lyme disease is pretty much restricted to the East Coast or the Northeast or whatever is totally not true, right?
No longer true.
Yeah.
It's false. There's a wild amount of false information and misunderstanding surrounding Lyme from like science and policy and general public's understanding. So, yeah, I was bitten here. I want to preface this whole conversation with I don't want to scare people.
No.
I don't want to dissuade people from spending time in sage scrub.
Right.
But yes, I was bitten here, and that was in 2017.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was pretty debilitating for you.
Yeah, it's been the hardest thing I've ever endured in my life. I'm a really tough person.
Yeah, you are. I've been around you enough. I know, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. You put up with Ken for that many years.
Yeah, you put up with him.
Ken, if he's listening, he's the best boss I've ever had, hands down. Ken is an incredible person.
Yeah, he is.
And elevated me, and I just owe so much to Ken. But, in 2017 I was bitten and went to a doctor, and because it is so misunderstood here, it was kind of downplayed, and they were like, you'll be fine. And then in 2020, for a few years, these very mysterious, very odd symptoms started creeping in, which I just wrote off as stress. So I thought, I'm just stressed. That's why I have vertigo and I have dizziness and I'm tired or whatever it was. So I just, kind of pushed through, as I have always done, some weird symptoms. And then in 2020, the whispers became screams, and I became bedridden for a year.
Bedridden for a year.
Couldn't get out of bed.
Yeah. Wow.
And I'm like a go-go-go.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah, so, I mean, again, I don't want to scare people. I just want to inform people and educate people.
And now you're fully recovered.
I'm like 90% there.
Still,
but I feel better and stronger and more resilient than I did before.
This is 4 years later.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From a bite, from something that's the size of a pencil eraser.
I know. Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm so glad to hear that you.
Yeah. I mean, I talk a lot in my book about, yes, I was bitten, and yes, I had the bacteria. It's a bacteria. Lyme is just the Borrelia bacteria. But many people get bitten, and many people don't get Lyme, like Exhibit A here. And
you can get tested for antibodies to know whether or not you've been exposed to these bacteria. And I got tested alongside Elena just to know for myself. And I have antibodies for 7 or 8 different species of these bacteria.
Wow.
But it's never affected me at all.
Yeah, and I find that super interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so I just think I was in a more vulnerable, susceptible state.
Yeah.
And, you know, happy-go-lucky Lyle over here.
he can go trudge around with a bison and the bush and stuff and just not worry about it.
Yeah.
But you wrote a book about it.
I did.
This is an informative book that people can get and educate themselves on the Lyme disease, or if they think they have it or something like that.
Yeah.
Right?
It's certainly not a how-to guide. You will learn a tremendous amount about Lyme. I'm also a pretty strong creative writer, so it allowed me to really like write evocatively and like emotionally, which was really a good exercise after writing kind of scientifically for a decade. That was really fun. So it's a good entertaining read, and you'll learn a lot about Lyme, but you could have like MS or fibromyalgia or any sort of any challenge. It's about like, you know, there's like a massive challenge to overcome, and then what it ends on is really what I've learned about, because I've lived, you know, 30 years of education and working and all that stuff. Like, I've wanted to help the planet. That's always been my, like, drive. Yeah. And I learned so much about environmental restoration and conservation through Lyme and what it's actually going to take.
Huh.
And so I've brought a lot. You know, now if I did ever find myself back in fisheries, I think I would do it a little differently now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, it's environmental, it's biology, it's Lyme, it's me, it's awesome.
Wow. So what's the name of the book?
I don't have a title yet.
I have
like 3 titles.
And has it been published yet?
No, this year.
Okay.
So
this year.
Yeah. It's,
all right.
It's,
well, we'll keep you informed here.
Done.
You just need to publish it and
get, and
I think it's going to be a great resource for people
because
I think you really worldwide.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's not just
It's not just
US,
the U.S.
problem. It's all over.
It's endemic to everywhere but Antarctica. It's the fastest growing vector-borne infectious disease in the United States. I think 500,000 people a year are getting it.
500,000 people?
And it's very difficult to test positive.
Yeah. 300,000 do test positive a year in the States.
Yeah.
So it's this huge elephant in the room. And it's called the great imitator because, like, you're like, oh, my joints hurt. Oh, I get these odd headaches. And then you might get, like, told you have arthritis.
Yeah.
You might, like, the root cause could actually be Lyme, which is treatable, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So, the CDC just acknowledged late-stage chronic Lyme is a thing because they were kind of resistant to that for a long time. So, I really think the book is on the forefront of all this because more people than ever have it. Awareness is growing. There are treatments. I just want people to feel empowered to know that you can treat this, because a lot of the narrative out there is like, if you get chronic Lyme, you're screwed for life.
You were ridden to bed and here you are now.
Yeah.
As healthy as could be.
And better for it.
I
am truly grateful for it.
And to that point, it's just as much a story about medical healing as it is about emotional healing. Because when you go through these traumatic experiences, there's the whole emotional side of it too. And that in and of itself is a huge story.
Yeah, when you can't do the dishes, it really plays against you.
Yeah. Especially for Lyle.
Yeah, let's talk about the caretaker.
Yeah.
Well, as you can hear, we have a great show with a lot of topics on the table today.
Well, no kidding. And you want to talk about, I mean, not obviously all the great things we aforementioned, but, you know, two people who've been involved in our fishery and our world for so long. It's going to be a great show, and we're just really looking forward to having you join us this morning. If you want to be a part of Let's Talk Hookup and give us a call, we would love to hear from you. And the number is 213-432-1090. Again, 213-432-1090 is how you reach us here on the phones, or send us a text. The text to the show has become so hugely popular with Let's Talk Hookup. You can text in your questions. The only way to do that is through the Let's Talk Hookup app. If you don't have it already, you really need to. It's a free download. There's no BS. There's no spam. There's no none of that stuff. It's just the easiest way to listen to Let's Talk Hookup. You can always catch the live stream. You can catch all the great archive shows. If you catch some killer little calico bass tidbit from Lyle, while today and you want to go back and review, it's always available through that Let's Talk Hookup app. Right. And again, the app is the only way that you can send in your text message questions. If you do, too, make sure you include your contact info. Just a name and a phone number is all we need in case you win the big prize at the end of the show. Because, man, are we giving away a cool trip for somebody today. So at the end of today's show, every caller that makes it on the air and every text that gets read on the air is going to be eligible, and we're going to flip a coin at the end of the show. Elena's going to do us the honor of flipping the prize coin, and we're going to decide who's going to get to go fishing on a full-day trip on board the San Diego at a C4 Sport Fishing. You'll get to fish with Captain Ryan Boschian or Matt Brawla, that amazing fishing those guys have had this year. One lucky caller or texter is going to get to do just that. So a lot of fun this morning. So stoked to have Lion Elena here, and if you want to join us again, 213-432-1090. When we come back, we're going to be taking your phone calls, reading those texts. You stay tuned. You're listening to Let's Talk Hookup on the Let's Talk Hookup app and the Sports Grid Radio Network.
Everyone has their go-to fishing spot. My spot is Kingfisher Charters in Sitka, Alaska. Rock Cod Rick here to say if you're looking for the ultimate Alaska experience and the best value in Alaska, it's Kingfisher Charters. Owner Seth Bone and his crew consistently deliver deluxe accommodations, the finest food, world-class fish processing, and top-of-the-line fishing experience. We've literally sent hundreds of our listeners to Kingfisher, and they all can't wait to go back. Most Alaska resorts make big promises, and they don't deliver, or they'll nickel and dime you to drive up the cost. But not Kingfisher. Everything is included. Your license, fish processing, super deluxe accommodations, amazing food, airport transfers, your gear. Literally, all you need to bring is your layer clothing, and Kingfisher covers the rest. They also have the finest boats and charter captains in Sitka, all for the ultimate value. Take it from me. Book your trip to Kingfisher Charters and you'll thank me. Kingfisher Charters, 800-727-6136, or check kingfishercharters.com.
Saturday, November 2nd, it's Tackle Day at Fisherman's Landing in San Diego, and it's our largest sale ever. Plenty of seminars by saltwater experts, over 20 reps from tackle manufacturers like Shimano. Come check out the new Shimano Talica A, the pinnacle of lever drag two-speed reels. The Talica features Shimano's Hagani body to prevent misalignment of moving parts under the heaviest loads. When throwing jigs, the Shimano Trinidad is your top choice. For the best ever tackle bargains, check out Tackle Day at Fisherman's Landing, Saturday, November 2nd.
Lobster season is here. It's time to get with the best in the business. Promar, based in SoCal, Promar knows lobster. Makes everything you need to catch these tasty critters. The Promar guys are hardcore lobster fishermen and have designed the most successful hoop nets and accessories on the market, including the new Ambush XLHD, 23-pound, 36-inch rigid hoop net, the largest allowed by law. Visit Promar on Facebook or on the web at promarahi.com. The lighter the bite and the cleaner the water means one thing. Need a thinner leader, more natural presentations. That's where Seaguar Gold Label leader material shines. It's Seaguar's thinnest leader material yet. That means it's even less visible underwater and creates more natural presentations for better catch rates on leader-shy fish. With exceptional knot and tinsel strength, this advanced leader material is now available from 2-pound test for fishing trout in the Sierra to 80-pound test for big yellowfin in Guadalupe. Get Seaguar Gold Label at your favorite tackle dealer or learn more at Seaguar.com.
Whether you're boating, floating, paddling, fishing, or just chilling, remember a good day on the water always starts with everyone wearing life jackets. Save the ones you love. Life jackets save lives. A message from California State Parks Division of Boating and Waterways.
Welcome back to Let's Talk Hookup. Again, if you want to join us, it's not going to be an easy morning this morning. We're, again, so stoked to have Lionel Lane in here. 213-432-1090 is the phone number. 100% packed up right now, but there's going to be a lot of time to get your phone calls in here today.
Very good. I guess we have one line open if you want to get through. 213-432-1090. Open right now. Chris is standing by for your phone calls, and the texts are flowing through, too.
Yeah, totally.
Only on the Let's Talk Hookup app can you text, and you have a chance to win that trip on the San Diego out of C4 Sport Fishing. You know, everybody thinks it's been, you know, of course, the offshore guys are killing the bluefin, just fantastic fishing out there. But that local yellowfin thing, Booker's kind of been keeping that honest and understand that there's some private boaters that are catching 70-pounders.
There's been, the lack of that huge Dorado and yellowfin thing that we were really hoping was going to would be a thing with that tremendous fishing that we've seen on the ridge. You know, the guys that are on longer trips have seen one of the better yellowfin bites I can remember in, you know, now 25 years being at the landing. I mean, it was as consistent as it ever has been, still is amazing great, and we were all hoping that that would flood into our local zone, and it hasn't as of yet, but obviously still hopeful. But the little bit feet that's around, especially that fish that are on the dolphin schools, has been, yeah, tremendous grade. Another really cool thing, Frank Capresti was in the tackle store yesterday telling us that Captain Aliar and the Player Supreme kind of located a new batch of fish that, in an area quite a bit closer to home that they hadn't been fishing. You know, a lot of that fish, as we all know, has been on Tanner Bank and Cortez and out there. Fish quite a bit closer to home in a really nice grade. They had a lot of fish that were in the 90 to 120-pound range, some fish bigger than that, and they had tremendous night fishing on jigs
again.
Leave
it to Aliar, right?
It was just, you know, like so, exactly, yeah, giant surprise. It was like anything. Last week we saw, I would call it nothing more than a bump in the road. You know, I mean, there's always ebb and flow to the season, and it was a little bit ebb, but boy, this week sure was good fishing again. Lots of really good numbers fishing on those 20 to 40 pounders. Big fish in the mix, that yellowfin you're talking about. Captain Taro on the Liberty, they had 45 yellows at the islands yesterday. There was some nice, really, really good fishing that happened this week.
Coming back.
Come on, baby.
Yeah, bring it back. And it's not over yet. Not even far from it.
This is
the beginning
month.
Of October. It's
October.
The prime time.
Totally.
Water's super cool on the coast, but as you get outside, it gets back to normal weather.
Yeah, I mean, it's October. It's usually when we see our nice weather and our nice fishing to come along with it.
Yeah, for sure. Well, phones are packed, and the texts are flowing through. They want to talk to Lyle and Elena. Let's jump into it.
You got it. Why don't we start on the phones with John? He's calling us from Dallas, Texas this morning. John, thanks for getting us started here on Let's Talk Hookup.
Good morning, guys and girl. My question is, to become a biologist, I'm 60 years old. Is that too late to get into that?
It's never too late. Go for it. It just takes a few years in grad school.
My workers' comp ended finally after 5 years of I couldn't do anything, so now they want to send me back to school to retrain me because I can't be a carpenter no more.
That sounds like an opportunity to me.
Absolutely. Johnny, you'll have at it, and there's nothing like pursuing something that's passion.
Yeah. If you're into it and you're passionate about it and you love it, I'd say go for it.
Why not?
It's never too late.
Never too late, for sure. Hey, thanks a lot for the phone call this morning, John. I got a great text here from Harry in Chula Vista, and he says, "Hi, Lyle. Great to hear from you. Years ago, you were tagging bass with your wife. I was one of the people that helped back in that area. Also, what improvements to stormwater collection and treatment do you see in place to improve our coastal environment with sewage and stormwater runoff?" Really good question.
Yeah.
Another real easy one.
Yeah. I mean, the bass tagging program was hugely successful. That was 2012 to 2014. That then merged with CCFRP, the California Cooperative Fisheries Research Program, and that's still ongoing. That's a consortium of six different universities up and down the California coast that are now running trips out of a bunch of landings up and down the coast to fish inside and outside the MPAs, tag all species, evaluate performance of the MPAs, and understand fish movements.
Is that just an extension of kind of everything that your project was?
Yeah, so awesome. So we were focusing on calicos and sand bass at the time. CCFRP focuses on everything, and it was just a perfect fit.
Oh, cool.
to merge with that broader and make that program statewide. So that's been super successful, and they still run trips every summer out of each landing up and down the coast. I think they run about a dozen trips. And so there's always opportunity to reach out to those universities and try and get on their email list and try to get on those trips because they're free. You can go out and join the trips and
help the cause.
You're fishing sort of scientifically, so you're fishing in a way that's standardized across all of the locations. That way the statistics are comparable mm-hmm. between all the data collection efforts when they combine them. So you might not be fishing the way you're normally used to. That's the only tricky part, but you're still out there fishing. You're contributing to science. Directly participating in the science, and the information you're using is being used, or the information you're collecting, is being used by CDFW to understand how those MPAs are working. So that's huge.
And how do you get on one of these trips?
Reach out to the universities. So for the San Diego trips, for example, reach out to the folks at Scripps Institution of Oceanography in Bryce Semmons' lab. Bryce and I are co-PIs on the program. Or you can reach out to me directly. You can just go to my website, lylebelquist.com. That works fine. LYALLBELLQUIST.com, and you can just email me through that as well, and we can get you signed up and get you on the list for the trips for next summer because they just finished.
There you go.
I think that's awesome.
Yeah,
but then to the pollution question, that's a huge issue all throughout, California and everywhere. I mean, in San Diego in particular, you know, we've got San Diego Bay here. There's a lot of industry, a lot of naval operations, a long history of things being done here. We also have Tijuana right next door and the flooding that comes out of the Tijuana River. So there's all sorts of water quality issues at play all the time. And there are organizations and institutions who are focusing on monitoring water quality. The city of San Diego has its own marine biology lab here that's always monitoring water quality. So the more monitoring we do, the more data we have to work with, the more we can make informed decisions, and that'll help the fisheries. So,
but what can they do? I mean, like, what are the solutions to the Tijuana River? What are the solutions to the plant in Point Loma and the storm runoff? I mean, are there any?
Yeah, I mean,
that's the big question. It's like,
yeah,
can we solve this?
Yeah, this is a huge can of worms. I believe it's solvable. You just have to get the right people at the table and the right people working together. Open dialogue, open discussion, collaborative spirit and collaborative relationships.
Maybe not solve it, but maybe you could curb some of it, right?
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
Spending so much time around sand bass, and, you know, Elena said it best, like, you know, one of the true foremost experts on it. Do you feel that, you know, has had an impact on, pardon me, on the decrease of sand bass in the spawning aggregate? Like, is any of that, you know, storm water pollution related, or do you think they're completely separate from each other? Just out of personal opinion.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly hasn't been tested. Most of the work that's been done on sand bass and calico bass populations has been focused on fishing and oceanography, because those are the two. Those really seem to be the two biggest drivers for adult abundance and population recruitment, respectively. Those are the two biggest drivers. Could water quality come into play? Absolutely, because barred sand bass, you know, you find the juveniles in the estuaries and in the bays where water quality is, you know, typically a concern. So it's definitely something we want to monitor and look into and stay on top of to understand what those linkages might be.
I think I only ask because I'm the San Diego guy, and, you know, like, we're just in, like, that micro thing. And you always hear people say the same thing. Oh, the Tijuana River is right outside the flats, and that's where we find our fish. But, I mean, that's just one spawning location on an entire coastline that they live. But, you know, when you're involved in that little, you know, when your world is quarter size instead of, you know, circle size, then you can't help but hear that. So I was just curious if, I mean, you know, like you said, you spend so much time around that fish. Curious on your personal opinion.
Yeah, that's awesome. Most of the influence on the bass populations seems to be water temperature and when the thermocline sets up and when it breaks down, depending on typical seasonal fluctuations that we see, and fishing pressure.
Yeah. And Elena, you did a lot of those tagging trips along with Lyle, and you were working with Sack. I remember you used to carry the ruler around measuring and stuff like that. What was that work, and what did that accomplish for you and Sack?
Yeah, so when I got to Scripps, I wanted to focus on, I came from commercial fisheries up in British Columbia, so I was used to, like, massive draggers and trawlers, and I came down to California thinking I would get involved in commercial fisheries, not really recognizing how big recreational fisheries is here, and so I quickly pivoted and thought, oh, I need to start focusing on recreational fisheries, and Lyle and Ken were the two names that kept coming my way. And so then Lyle said he needed volunteers to come and help on those tagging projects, so I thought I should get some sea time in, I think we spent 40, I think I did 40 tagging trips.
40 or 50, yeah.
In that first couple of years in San Diego. So I had a steep learning curve and learned a lot about the fleet in a short amount of time, and that is what fed me directly into working for SAC. So it worked out, and also getting married.
Kind of had a cool purpose, right?
It was awesome, and I can totally hold my own now when I go out on, like, half day and three quarter day. You know, I don't need that first trip though. I did not know how to fish. Lyle just threw a rod at me and was like, "Catch some bass." I was like, what are you talking about? Like, I don't know anything. You know?
I could have taken a little bit more time.
Yeah, but there was like 40, you know, volunteers on the boat. I just like, I just looked around and I had like all the help I could need. Cool. Yeah, so that was great. So then with those huge calipers you see, not me anymore, but you used to see me, and now you see, I think, Ken mostly down at the dock. So that was the bluefin tuna. Well, all tunas. We do a bunch of measuring to provide the federal government to make management decisions with. So in 2015, the bluefin tuna stock assessment, that was 2014, came out, and it was pretty shocking.
Yeah,
pretty grim.
Yeah, it was 2 points. The stock was at 2.6% of unfished spawning stock biomass. So that was a wake-up call. So at the time, we were quite literally moments away from losing access to bluefin. I'm not sure people really grasp how close
it
we
was.
Were. And you can thank Ken for spearheading that one. And, so out of that chaotic time, we came up with this program. This is a program designed and led and still led by SAC to collect length frequency data for all tunas, but bluefin was kind of the driver for it. So today it's a 10-year data set. We have over 20,000 tuna measured by the fleet. So this is all tuna measured 100% by crew members while at sea. 100% of the funding that we get from the federal government goes directly to the crew members. I think it's been $500,000 now from the federal government and 20,000 tuna measured. And as of last year, the data set is now being used to in the stock assessment. Yep. So you have data that is being collected by the industry, funded by the federal government, and used in an international assessment. It's collaboration on a level like I have not really seen in fishery.
Yeah, that is extremely rare.
That is extremely rare, and it's great for the fleet because it's empowering.
And look at the comeback.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, so the most recent assessment, go ahead.
The most recent assessment was completed 2022.
It was this year based on 2022 data.
Yeah, so it's now at 10.6% of unfished spawning stock biomass. So we went from 2.6 to 2.3 to 10.6 in 8 years.
Yeah, way quicker than we anticipated originally. Yeah. So it's been a huge.
So what's comeback. That mean, 2.6 to 10.3 unfished biomass? So that means so 2.3 means that all but 2% of the fish were being fished. Now it's 10%. Only 90% of the fish are fished. Am I reading that right? I don't quite understand.
Yeah.
You guys are biologists. You've got to speak some language.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to think about it on simplest terms, you can just use it as a relative scale. It was at 2.5. Now it's 10. So we're, you know, roughly four times where we were at the point. But unfished spawning stock biomass is a metric and an estimate that stock assessment scientists use to characterize where we are relative to a fishery, relative to a species that would be unfished, based on estimates and information about species life history and biology.
Compare that to like Yellowfin. What would be the unfished biomass?
I'm not sure where we are.
Would it be much higher on that, or
it would be higher.
Yeah.
It would be higher right now because the yellowfin stock is in better shape than the bluefin stock. But by how much, I don't remember. I'd have to go back and look at the stock assessment reports.
All right. Well, one place, though, where the elephant stock is really good, and that's down in the East Cape.
Nice.
And we have Chris Moyer from Smokey's Curing Company and Cantina on the line. Right, Rick?
Yeah. Good morning, Chris.
Pedro, Rick, buenos dias. How's everybody doing today?
Doing great, buddy. Good morning. Anxious to hear how things are going down in the cave.
I'm really anxious because I'm headed.
We are definitely doing well on the yellowfin stock down here, guys. Yeah, and as well as the Dorado right now. So too, yeah. So this week, what a week of fishing leading up to your trip down here, Pedro. We had just a wide open Dorado bite, and you know they're everywhere, close in, you know, down off of Punta Pescadero to the north, all the way, you know, from Rancho Leonero, La Ribera to the lighthouse, Punta Arena, down to Fridays. We had some tuna come in. It's been a little bit slower, but we had some. We've been seeing some yellowfin tuna this week. Over there off of Fridays. Fridays they found some, and down off Punta Pescadero. And so the water temp right now is about 83 to 87, depending upon where you are. We've got beautiful sardinas. We've got ballyhoo. People are using the barrelete, the little skipjack, for bait. Pedro, we got we saw about 8 wahoo come in yesterday, so that was really cool. We might try to target some of that for your trip, buddy.
All right. Yeah, that sounds good. 2 points on our tournament, our Let's Talk Hookup tournament for wahoo.
Yeah. So, the other day, I mean, I think it was 2 days ago, Zakara ended up with 12 Dorado and two wahoo and a nice marlin that they released. Sailfish everywhere right now. It's wide open right now, guys. So it's a good time to be coming down for sure.
Sounds really
awesome.
Great timing for our 30th annual Let's Talk Hookup Palmas de Cortez tournament.
I can't believe that, man. 30? Who can believe that? That's crazy.
It sounds like a
tournament. You know, Pop started the smokehouse in 95, right behind you.
Yeah.
We were right behind you. I said Pop started the smokehouse in 95, so we're right behind you, man. You beat us by a year, I think. Is that my math right?
Couple of years.
Okay. All right.
Well, of course, Smokey's great place to have lunch, dinner, cocktails, watch the games. Of course, you'll have all the playoff games down there, Padre games.
Oh, tonight we've got a huge crowd for the Pods. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, there's a lot of Dodger fans down there, too, I'll bet.
Well, we got some side bets. We definitely got some side bets.
They have to watch.
Yeah, you're either a Dodger fan or a Padres fan down here for sure. So we got a lot of side bets.
And of course, the best boat in the East Cape, Vaquera. How do we get a hold of you, Chris? We want to come down there and get some great fishing and some good food.
You can get a hold of me at vaquerasportfishing.com. That's VAQUERA. Or Baja Smoke Dog with 2 G's at Gmail. And we'll look forward to seeing you. I'm probably going to go on the wagon until you get here, because I'm pretty sure the tequila is going to be flowing like leche miel once you get here. So I'm going to get tuned up.
With my brother-in-law John coming, it's probably a good
one. Your cuñado and your compa Mark, they've already gotten in touch with me. So I'm going to get tuned up.
Watch out. All right. You take care, and we'll see you Thursday and talk to you right back here on Saturday, next Saturday.
Okay. Take care, guys.
All right. Thanks for that. All right. Hey, you have a great text, huh, Rick?
I thought so for sure. It's from Darren and Menifee. So, good morning, Pete, Rick, Lyle, and Elena. My question is for Lyle. I've heard that calicos that are 12 inches long are approximately 7 years old. Do you have an idea at how old a 14-inch fish and maybe up to an 18-inch fish? Also, do sand bass follow similar growth and age patterns? Thanks for sharing your knowledge. Love having you guys on the show.
Yeah, great question. I always get these questions about how old some fish is, what size, and No, they're always fun ones. Calicos and sand bass have very, very similar growth rates. So that's helpful when it comes to management. But overall, so let's see. At the original size limit from pre-2013, which was 12 inches, calicos were about 5 to 6 years old. So they mature about a little bit earlier than your caller was mentioning. They mature around 3 to 4 years old. At the original size limit, they were about 5 to 6 years old when they were entering the fishery. Now, and I think this is where he gets the 7 year old estimate from, a 14 inch fish is about 7 to 8 years old. So they went from 5 to 6 to 7 to 8, which gave us a couple more years than we originally had of spawning before they enter the fishery.
The idea
of 12 inches was that fish at 12 inches had an opportunity to spawn. It was up spawning size.
Yes.
But maybe you only got one or two cycles out of it. Now you're ensuring that a fish that gets taken out of the population has had a chance to at least participate in rebuilding it multiple times.
Exactly, yeah. And conventionally, that's the way we typically do it in fisheries management. So you want to allow your species opportunity to spawn before it enters the fishery. And so usually you give the species
species 1 to 2 years, and that's where you start thinking about where the size limits would be set. But in the case of calicos and sand bass, we learned that you need to be a little bit more conservative for those species to allow greater spawning potential.
Very good. Let's jump back to the phones, Rick.
You got it. How about we talk to John? He's calling us from Escondido this morning. John, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. It's always a wealth of knowledge when you get to listen to your shows and stuff. I got a comment and then a question. I got to do back-to-back trips last weekend, 2 days. I did 2 days on the Tomahawk, and then I did two days on the Cortez with Rambo. And they were both phenomenal, but both different. You know, we got a lot of nighttime fishing on the Tomahawk and just all daytime fishing on the Cortez. But nice crate of fish and a great group of people. So get out and go fishing. But my question, so the sand bass, I used to, the area I grew up in, I would fish the Huntington Flats a lot. And it just, you know, you can go out there and it was just wide open, you know, all the time. But not so much now anymore. Is it just the habitat changed? Or, what caused that to kind of just dissipate?
Great, great question. So I remember those days in the mid-late 90s or even early 2000s, right up until about 06, 07, 08, when fishing for sand bass in June, July, August was just off the charts. I mean, you guys remember this too.
Oh, yeah.
At the time, our best estimates indicate sport boats were, the fleet collectively was catching around 600,000 to 700,000 fish based on the logbook data. The private boat sector was catching another 300,000 to 400,000 fish at the peak. So for about a 5 to maybe 7-8 year period, we were catching over 1 million fish a year, just barred sand bass, just in Southern California, just in June, July, August, and primarily from only 5 locations, right? Imperial Beach, Huntington Flats, Ventura Flats, San Onofre, et cetera. So that's why fishing was so good at the time. We knew where the spawning aggregations were. We were targeting them at the time at those places, and fishing was just wide open. But what we've learned from fishing spawning aggregations in other species all around the world is typically that's not sustainable. You want to be very conservative if you're fishing in those times and places.
So do you think the answer is to close it during some of the spawning cycles?
Well, landings went down tremendously from 07, 08 to 2012, and in recognition of that, CDFW became more stringent with size limits and bag limits. That worked for calicos, but it didn't work for sand bass because of the aggregation behavior, which makes them more vulnerable. So something more needs to be done, and that discussion is on the table right now. The California Department of Fish and Wildlife is considering using what's called a management strategy evaluation, and really that's a quantitative analytical process that allows you to evaluate trade-offs between different management options based on the data that we have and the life history information that we have for the species. So essentially what you could do, for example, is you could say, okay, there's a five fish bag limit today. We can run that through the management strategy evaluation and look at what status quo would give us, given the fact that the new cohort of sand bass has been coming in this year. But we could also look at a 4-fish bag limit, a 3-fish bag limit. We could evaluate those different management options and project out what the impact would be and what the fishery would look like under those theoretical management scenarios. You could do that with size limits. You could do it with seasonal regulations. You could do it with any sort of management intervention that you can think of that typically gets used. Yeah. You can plug that into a management strategy evaluation to understand what the impact would be.
Good example of that is the 14-inch size limit on the calico sand bass and what it's done to the calico population.
Yeah.
But one thing I'll mention is the last thing, again, we want is more regulations, but we want better fisheries. So sometimes better fisheries necessitate tighter bag limits.
Exactly.
Another example would be bluefin tuna.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We went from 10 fish to 2 fish on bluefin. Elena was a huge part of that, if you want to speak to it.
Yeah, I mean, like I said a few minutes ago, we were moments away from losing all access to bluefin, and that would have been problematic for a number of reasons, because when you're not actively fishing a species, and you don't have any say at the international table. So it's really good that we maintained access. Things I never thought I would be doing in grad school is like international fishery.
Yeah.
Managing at the international level.
Yeah, it's really, really awesome. But so we went down to two, and I bet if you asked most bluefin anglers, they're quite satisfied with the two fish limit. I don't think that we've seen a huge outcry.
It's totally fine.
10 bluefin in the conditions we've had the last 10 years would be outrageous.
Trust me, the bigger problem I hear every day is my fisherman's processing bill is higher than I
know.
If it was, five or 10 fish, I don't know what we would be doing, let alone two.
So the United States is a really small portion of the total catch. Most of the catch for bluefin is occurring over in Japan, and then the remainder is Mexico and the U.S., but it's a small amount here, but it's really vital to the local industry, and we know how much the industry is part of the economy here. So, I think bluefin so far has been a very, very good success story, only in, the last 10 years of, some pretty aggressive management, but what's come out of it, like the bluefin tuna program.
Yeah, the stack fishery sampling program.
Stack fishery sampling program.
Which has expanded.
Yeah, so it's been, we've...
It's all good stuff.
And people see the success in it, and they feel more comfortable when other things happen. Well, as you can hear, with just so much great stuff coming in, a whole lot more. You stay tuned. You're listening to Let's Talk Hookup on the Let's Talk Hookup app and Sports Grid Radio Network.
The fish are biting, and it's time to go. Hi, this is Ben, and you will see me at my dad's shop, Dana Landing in Mission Bay, or maybe in front of the shop on my kayak. It doesn't matter if you are out there on a kayak with me, on your boat, headed out on a sport boat. Dana Landing has everything you need. We call it the one-stop shop for a great day on the water, because it truly is. Food, bait, tackle, beverages, and more. Our tackle shop, headed by John, is certainly one of the best. For freshwater tackle, nothing beats East County Bait and Tackle. These guys have the best rods and reels and the hottest lures and live bait. Our newest shop is Lemon Grove Bait and Tackle, with a great stock of both fresh and saltwater tackle right in the heart of Lemon Grove. ECBT is at the end of the 67 freeway on Maple View and Lakeside. Lemon Grove Bait and Tackle, 94 to Broadway in Lemon Grove, and Dana Landing is next to the Dana Lawn Tramp in Mission Bay. Check out danalanding.com for more details.
Hey, it's time to talk about great gear from Shimano, and I just came back from fishing in South Carolina and offshore a little bit, and fishing the new Talica 25A. Wow.
What a machine, huh?
You know what's so cool about it, Rick, is it's compact, but it's still a machine.
Yeah.
And
totally.
The new handles on both the 20 and 25, game changer.
That 25 power handle is, I'm with you too. The extra size out of the 20 I love, but that 25 that you were fishing this past week with that new power handle, it's amazing.
But you look at the size, and it's considerably smaller than the original 25, but still has the same capacity line wise.
It's a great reel.
Yeah.
A fantastic job.
And a lot of other improvements is the dual drag the dual drag system that gives you more power and more flexibility.
Original was a single disc drag. They've gone to a multi disc system with two drag washers on the plate. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's an amazing, powerful reel, compact size, and it can land that big fish that you're targeting. Check it out, the new Talica A series at your local Shimano dealer.
Get ready for the largest event in our history. Saturday, November 2nd, it's Tackle Day at Fisherman's Landing in San Diego. We'll have great savings from Daiwa on Saltus, Saltiga, and the entire electric reel lineup. A fantastic offer on the Proteus rod and SK jigs, too. Over 20 manufacturers' reps, including Daiwa. Plenty of seminars, saltwater experts, huge raffle, and most of all, incredible deals on tackle. Up to 60% off. Tackle Day at Fisherman's Landing, Saturday, November 2nd.
Hello, this is Captain Mike Totter from Surger Sport Fishing. Alongside my colleague, Chef Josh Evans, and our dedicated team, we invite you to join us aboard the Surger. Our fishing trips range from a day and a half to 8 days, available May through November, and include charter options. We're committed to upholding a legacy of top-notch customer service, delicious food, and a friendly and talented crew. Book your fishing adventure online at surgersportfishing.com or call Rachel at 619-226-2403. That's surgersportfishing.com. We look forward to welcoming you aboard.
Captain Jamie Dennis from Season Sport Fishing here. For the past few seasons, a dart-styled metal jig has come into play in a big way for tuna offshore or even rockfish down deep. AFCO's crossbreed jig has quickly become the go-to for many since it came onto the market. AFCO's crossbreed jig is good to go right out of the package with a 4X treble hook, heavy-duty split rings, West Coast colors, and sizes 60 gram to 120 gram. Pick one up today at your local tackle store or learn more on AFCO.com.
Welcome back to Let's Talk Hookup. Having a great time here this morning. Lots of phone calls lined up. Lots of great text information. Boy, what a great show we've been having and a whole lot of fun. If you want to join us this morning, 213-432-1090. How you doing?
Yeah, Chris is standing by. We're going to come back in the studio, but you just heard Captain Mike Totterd on the line there. You saw Surger Sport Fishing right in the background. They had a great trip.
Yeah,
they unloaded a bunch of fish this morning.
When I was walking up to the world headquarters, I was watching them unload into the carts, and man, it was in a really nice grade, too.
Yeah.
Really good blue pins.
Oh, yeah, for sure. What a great operation. Mike's taken over from Martin Celia and Josh, and just done a fantastic job on the Surger. So check SurgerSportFishing.com and get on that list, because they fill up very, very quickly.
Yeah,
yeah, for sure. Hey, lots of good stuff, lots of good questions, and you have another text I saw.
I definitely did. Yeah, it says, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I've always thought that calico bass would be a perfect candidate for a slot limit fish. My brother lives in New Orleans and says it's done such a great job for certain species down there. I only hesitate because it's a slippery slope and fisheries and wildlife potentially applying it to species that didn't necessarily need it. I was wondering if Lyle could give us his thoughts on a slot limit. That's from Rory in Lakeside.
Yeah, Rory's got a great question. Slot limits are really effective for managing fisheries, particularly recreational fisheries. In the state of California, I believe we only have one species with a slot limit, which is white sturgeon. I don't think any other species have it right now. It's been discussed many, many times. It's always on the table as a management option. But you know, the department and the industry seem comfortable, and enforcement also seem comfortable with just the minimum size limit approach. The biology supports it. Could a slot limit be viable and be a better option? Possibly. But it's just something that we haven't gotten to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Very good. Let's jump back on the phones.
You got it. How about we talk to Cliff? Cliff's calling from Blossom Valley this morning. Hi, Cliff. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, guys, and great show. So informative. Hey, my question is about fish eating safety. We catch and eat a lot of fish. So in particular three, like halibut caught right off Imperial Beach, perhaps lobsters out of San Diego and Mission Bay, and then just in general, tuna and yellowtail caught out at sea. We eat a lot, and I'm not going to stop, but people ask me questions all the time. So what do you think about those?
That is a phenomenal question, and you might not realize how timely your question is, actually. Some of my colleagues at Scripps just finished a study looking at contaminants in a number of species caught in Southern California. Many of those species are recreationally targeted and popular, and they found that, by and large, contaminant loads in the species that we catch here locally are very low. So generally speaking, recreational species that you're used to catching are very safe to eat. There is one hot spot of contaminants at the Palo Verde Superfund site. That was a historical dumping ground back in the 50s and 60s. So if you're eating, for example, white croaker from a very specific spot,
like right off of Palos Verdes,
in a spot where not many people fish anyways,
because they basically killed it with all the DTT.
So there's that, but you know, we've already known about that for a long time. So other than that isolated little example, recreational species are very safe to eat.
When I was younger, I lived in Marina Del Rey area and used to scuba dive a lot right in that area where the DDT was dumped in Alpha Palisades, and I'm still here.
Yeah, there you go.
So, you know.
There you go.
Comparing you to a normal person, it's not the same.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay,
that's
you're
true.
Here.
Okay? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now, let's not use that as your
argument. Yeah, I got a lot of issues, I'm still here. Yeah. But I remember that seascape being just barren.
Really?
I mean, yeah, the only thing we really saw a lot of were the electric rays.
A
lot of those in that zone.
Yeah,
but it was like the bottom was devoid of life.
Wow, what a trip.
Yeah, devoid of life.
I mean, it's important to remember that the Superfund dumping site is offshore in thousands of feet of water.
Yeah.
So exposure to anything from that area, even for people who fish in the general area, is really low.
Yeah,
so that's worth.
But that was that. This was the area just not far from the coast that they used to dump DDT.
Oh wow!
Into,
okay,
back in the day, long time ago.
Yeah,
before you were born.
You had mentioned a study that your colleagues are working on. Is that something that'll be available to the public? Where would one find that?
It just got accepted for publication. Oh gosh, I'm not sure which journal. I'm not sure which journal yet, but I can shoot an email. But if you just go on to Google Scholar, a lot of people don't know what Google Scholar is.
What is Google Scholar?
Google Scholar is a source that houses scientific studies that get produced in the peer-reviewed literature, and it's through Google. If you want to learn about scientific published studies on any topic you're interested in, go on to Google Scholar and do the searches, and you're going to find those. You're going to find those studies.
That's awesome.
Are we going to find Elena's work on Lyme disease on Google Scholar?
I don't know. It's not going to be academic.
It's peer-reviewed literature, not books.
We've got some joint stuff on bass, like a lot of...
Yeah, some of our studies are on there.
Yeah.
So. Google Scholar. Google Scholar?
Yeah.
And then look up what you want?
Look up what you want.
By author, by subject. So if you wanted to focus on, you know, Lyle's bass work, you could just put Lyle Elderquist in.
Wow.
Yeah. And you can find those studies. It's dry reading. I wouldn't recommend it for anyone trying to stay awake at night.
But for a scholar like you guys,
super interesting.
It's super interesting.
Well, and you can scan the abstracts, right? Like, you don't have to go through the entire, like, all the figures and the papers.
Right,
you know,
right,
like,
yeah.
That's maybe more our jam, but you can, you know, all the abstracts will be available.
You could find information about subjects you might be interested in.
Yeah.
Awesome.
But if CDFW is making management changes and you want to learn where that science is coming from, go to Google Scholar.
Okay.
Hey, when we come back, we got a lot more Let's Talk Hookup coming here, including checking in with the Catch Report. We're going to find out what's biting up and down the coast. You stay tuned. More Let's Talk Hookup coming your way on the Let's Talk Hookup app and the Sports Grid Radio Network.
Hey, everyone. James Holst here with North Lithium, the official battery partner of Let's Talk Hookup. Here at North Lithium, we have two goals that drive who we are and what we do. The first is to make the highest quality, longest lasting lithium batteries available with a complete lineup of batteries that include 12, 24, 36 volt and starting batteries. Second, in addition to offering a 10-year warranty on all North Lithium marine batteries, we provide amazing customer service before and after the sale. Check us out online at norslithium.com. That's NORSK lithium.com, or call us at 831-232-90. Or to see North Lithium batteries in person, stop by the Trolling Motor Dock in Lakewood or Anglers Marine in Anaheim and see why North Lithium batteries should be in your boat.
No matter where the adventure takes you, we've got you powered. North Lithium.
Great fishing is what Seaforth Sports Fishing in Mission Bay is all about. With free parking and fully stocked tackle shop, Seaforth Sport Fishing is a favorite among anglers. Come aboard top boats like the Asset, Cortez, Endeavor, Apollo, Outer Limits, Elgato Go, Pride, Polaris Supreme, Tribute, Pacifica, Pacific Voyager, and the Voyager. Plus, the new Seaforth Sea Watch in San Diego offer the finest half and full day trips available. Seaforth Sport Fishing. For charters or schedule, check seaforthlanding.com. Run by fishermen for fishermen in Mission Bay.
This is Captain Tim Ekstrom from the long-range vessel Royal Star. With my partners Randy Toussaint and Brian Sims, we have set the bar for the long-range fishing experience. Spring 8-day, summer 5-day, or fly-down, fly-back 11-day winter trip, we deliver the highest quality long-range voyage you will find. From our premium RSW fish storage to our top-of-the-line chefs and crew, Royal Star distinguishes itself from all others. Want to grab a spot on the Royal Star? Check us out at RoyalStarSportFishing.com or call Tracy at 619-224-4764.
Saturday, November 2nd, it's Tackle Day at Fisherman's Landing in San Diego, and it's our largest sale ever. Plenty of seminars by saltwater experts and over 20 reps from tackle manufacturers like Daiwa, Salty Crew, Maxell, Iser, and Two Fish Jigs. Don't miss all the great seminars, the huge raffle to benefit Rollo Kids, the popular casting contest, and of course, the huge sale. For the best ever tackle bargains, check out Tackle Day at Fisherman's Landing, Saturday, November 2nd.
Inside information is everything when it comes to catching fish in Southern California. You need a code group to connect with what's happening on the water. FishDope.com is your code group. Inside information available at your fingertips 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. FishDope.com really does help you catch more fish and burn less fuel. FishDope.com is the only fish finding service with a spotter plane, along with a crew of top anglers on the water almost every day that report actual locations and catches. They become your code group. You get daily catch reports from point conception to Sankatine, 365 days a year. FishDope.com has online planning tools, temperature and chlorophyll charts, hot bite icons, and more. Take it from me, if you don't have FishDope.com, you're not part of the in-the-know crowd. Membership is affordable and good for an entire year. Plus, use the special code and save $30 on a new FishDope.com membership. Check it out today. FishDope.com. Catch more fish, burn less fuel.